Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
What's up, everybody? Welcome. You're listening to the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio and on YouTube.tv. We are your hosts for this evening. This is a quite interesting show to start off. Breaking news, your boy Sean and Tristan Ducrosse have it. Sean, the boxing world's about to get shaken up.
Yeah, and it just got heartbreaking to it for a lot of the boxing fans out there, and we're going to hit that right now.
So for everybody that's been on social media right now, on our Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse, or the Warriors on the Sports Warriors page, or on Twitter at the Ducrosse Bros, or Fight Book MMA, we are live right now, and it is happening. Canelo Alvarez gives up his title, his WBC lineal title, and that, my friend, goes over to Triple G.
Yeah. I was talking to Fight Book just before the show because this just broke just before we got on the air here, so I couldn't help but talk with them about what's going on. So when you look at everything that's going on, my issue resides with this, okay? WBC announces that Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, is a full-time WBC middleweight champion. They released a poster that said, "My blood is green, my heart is gold." What does he think he is, the leprechaun? And that there's gold at the end of the rainbow? I guess in his eyes, there was. He knew that Canelo Alvarez was not going to take this fight. And there's a lot of reports that come down that said that, you know, all Canelo Alvarez was doing was puffing up his chest and saying what everybody wanted him to say, when in reality, the situation, we knew this fight wasn't going to happen. And why we knew this fight wasn't going to happen was that Gennady Golovkin was the mandatory WBC contender for Canelo Alvarez dating back from his win against Marco Rubio. They were supposed to fight before Canelo Alvarez and Amir Khan. That fight only happened because of Triple G and Canelo Alvarez entering discussions where they both agreed to fight interim fights. He took Amir Khan, and Triple G took Dominic Wade, with the understanding that one day after the fight, if they both won, that they would then enter talks for their fight. Now we are here, May 18th, 2016, where it was announced by Canelo Alvarez and Golden Boy Promotions that this fight is on hold as Canelo Alvarez vacated the title.
See, once again, it comes down to the fact that I have coined a phrase for boxing, and that, my friend, is what I classified as a fake middleweight. The fake middleweight comes by the way of the fact that as a middleweight, you should be able to fight at 160.
No doubt, when that's the weight class.
How you can keep coming in at 185 and defending a middleweight title is beyond me.
Or why you keep having to make a catchweight at 155 to fight everybody at middleweight.
Right. So when I look at Canelo Alvarez and I see a guy that says all the right things,
does all the right things,
and I'm in shock because Canelo Alvarez, he stood there in the middle of the ring. Did he not?
Yes.
Did he not call in Gennady Golovkin into the ring? Did he not look right into the face of Gennady Golovkin and say, "You got your fight at 160. I will fight you at 160. And then all of a sudden, weeks later, "Nah, homie, I ain't about that life." Oh, wait. You want to spin this in your favor so you don't look like every other fighter that claims to be a middleweight that isn't a middleweight, is by pointing fingers at other people, basically saying this is the WBC's fault because they demanded him to fight Gennady Golovkin. they have put a timetable on the fight between Gennady Golovkin. And on top of that, Canelo says that this should be an interim title fight for Gennady Golovkin, and he should not be facing him. WBC says, whoa, whoa, whoa. How many opportunities have we given you for the interim title or fight for interim titles because certain people weren't ready? We're done with interim titles. You fight who we say you fight. If you're the number one contender, you fight the number one contender. There is no more, well, I'm going to fight this guy, not this guy. WBC says, dude, we're putting a stop to it. And I'm okay with that because it's about time WBC does something.
Here's my issue.
To relegate or regulate their brand.
Here's my issue. Canelo Alvarez, Oscar De La Hoya, and Golden Boy Promotions said that they were not okay with the stipulations that WBC set out forth to get this fight dialed in. Felt like it was too much pressure on them. Okay? So my rebuttal to that is, can somebody explain to me how you are given 30 days of free negotiations, which was scheduled to start talks on May 9th. From that point forward, you then have 15 days to reach an agreement. Then from that point forward, you had until the 24th, where you would then have a meeting with the sanctioning bodies to go over the purse.
Sean, that he did not show up at.
Tristan, we're not even there.
No. But
we didn't even get anywhere.
Sean, they said that they had a meeting with Gennady Golovkin and the WBC, and that he did not show up at the said meeting for what they were classifying as a gentleman's agreement.
The only thing that I've understood was that the gentleman's agreement was before this whole thing took place. That was the agreement. The agreement was that they would get to this spot and the fight would happen. Not where we're at right now. That's what the gentleman's agreement was. They didn't even get to the purse talk. All Gennady Golovkin said and his camp said was that he wanted this fight at middleweight. He wanted this fight at 160. He didn't care about the money. All he wanted was this to be at 160. And according to WBC sanctioning bodies, due to the fact that the fight was a mandatory fight for Canelo Alvarez, there was no option for a catch weight. Huh. Go figure. So that's one loophole he couldn't exploit this time. And then now we're again at this state. If you are going to talk the talk and you're going to walk around as a champion, back it up. When you were at your post-fight press conference too, and you reiterated to all the fans and the media around and said, hey people, there will be no issues. There will be no weight issues. So if there is going to be no weight issues and there is no other issues to even be discussed, why are we here? Why are we not getting this fight that all the fans want? Why are we seeing Gennady Golovkin being paraded around by the WBC as a WBC champion?
As the full middleweight WBC champion.
Like I told our boys from Fightbook, was that the only way this fight would make sense is if you take the vacated title and put it up for grabs. If I'm Gennady Golovkin, as pride has it for me,
I wouldn't even take the title.
Why would I want to be crowned? You know what? Now this fuels me if I'm Gennady Golovkin more than ever.
Because you're supposed to be able to prove yourself and prove your worth.
Yeah. Now you don't get to prove your worth.
You don't even get to, you don't get a big money time fight. Canelo Alvarez, Canelo, Sean, against Amir Khan, check these numbers out. 500,000 pay-per-view buys. A $714 million live gate. Gennady Golovkin, 250,000 pay-per-view buys, $300 million at the live gate. You tell me how Gennady Golovkin's a draw And where does this now put the factor of where you thought you had a big money fight into perspective?
Here's the issue.
Okay.
Gennady Golovkin was not a draw against David Lemieux. It could have been a number of things. The fact that nobody knows who David Lemieux is from Canada. Nobody really knows about Triple G except for he's setting the field on fire because of his knockouts. Canelo Alvarez has the following because he's with Oscar De La Hoya. And he's doing things from the Hispanic community that hasn't been done since Julio Cesar Chavez. But my question raises this, okay? We've discussed this on a number of different platforms, a number of different topics over the course of 10 years. Is that when we talk about boxing, it's always been vastly reported. Boxing is dying. It's a dying breed.
See,
and
hold on.
One thing you and I have said for a long time was that you needed that next breed of animal to come up and put boxing back on the map. We thought you were going to put boxing back on the map with Canelo, with Amir Khan, with Triple G, with David Lemieux. The list goes on. The Chris Eubanks Juniors of the world. You think Earl Spence, you think that these guys are all putting boxing on the map. They're putting exciting fights out there. The Sean Porters, the Keith Thurmans. See, the list goes on and on of guys like you and I that say, you know what? Boxing is on the right trend. But when you just spew out the numbers that's in our chat room right now of what Canelo and what Triple G drew, it shows boxing is still a dying breed. No matter how exciting it is to you, to myself, to the guys of Fight Book, to everybody in the combat community, numbers don't lie. There is something that is still not selling to the combat sports fans.
Because once you sell yourself out there as a product, as a brand, you have to be open and honest to the fans. I think where boxing lacks is their open and honesty as a boxing organization. Because truly, how many titles does a guy have to win? How many different middleweight titles do you have to have? How many heavyweight titles do you have to have?
And that's been the ongoing thing about for you and I. Why do you need 20 different weight classes just for one title belt?
Gennady Golovkin will walk in with four titles. He's a full-time now WBC middleweight champion that they just handpicked and crowned. Why should it be any different? Take off those three titles that you have, the Ring Magazine and everything else. You are the WBC middleweight champion. Here's your title. You should not have four or five different titles because you fight in one little category. You shouldn't. But everybody loses so much perspective about boxing and where it's going that you look at this Canelo and Triple G and everybody's all up in arms about it. WBC should have done this. WBC should have done this. Yes, absolutely. But when you're looking at the bigger picture, there's so many other issues that come about that led to this. And I just believe that Canelo is going to get the brunt end of it because of what he has said. And you know, it's like the person that has cried wolf. You keep telling the fans that you're going to do this. You keep saying you're going to do this and that. But in reality, you have yet to prove it. You have yet to show it.
And that's the thing that I begin to wonder. And that is, when you go ahead and say, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that.
Actions speak louder than words.
Absolutely. So is that what's losing the fans? Is the boxing fans continuously see all these champions say, I'm going to do this for you. And then in return, we end up in situations like this.
Do we really even know who is one of the greatest pound-for-pound boxers in the world? Do we? Because it's not the era where we had Frazier, Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson,
Sugar Ray Leonard,
where we could legitimately pinpoint, you are the greatest. People could say pretty boy Floyd Mayweather. I could disagree.
But on paper, you have to say right now in this era, in the time of us, Floyd Mayweather is pound for pound the best boxer in boxing today. But that's the generation we're in. It doesn't matter what field you're in. Regardless if you're in boxing, wrestling, whatever you may say, is that when it comes down to it, is that when you look at legends or icon statuses of the game, we're not even there anymore. We are in the era of social media. What can I say to get myself out there? But when you look at it, the guys of Julio Cesar Chavez, Sugar Ray Leonard, Hearns,
regardless of
Hagler,
like it or not, Roy Jones Jr.
Absolutely. Those guys all did their actions in that ring, one way or another. Even I'm going to throw a freaking haymaker out there for everybody, even though many people didn't like this guy. Prince Nassim Hamed.
Right.
People didn't like him because he was so flashy. But one thing he did was he went out there and fought.
He showed up every single day.
He put on shows for the fans.
Yep.
Where are we at now? Just who can talk the best?
Really? Who can poke the bear?
Really? Sometimes I feel bad for being in the era that I am in. I am so old school and my upbringing is ridiculous that I cannot associate myself
with the new school.
No. A little bit to a degree, yes.
But not full.
But I'm so old school, it's ridiculous. It's like if you're going to compete. It's like watching baseball and you got Bryce Harper saying that you need to bring the fun back to the game. In baseball, it wasn't about being fun. Back in the old day of baseball,
well, his terminology of fun is playing the game hard. But wait, you play the game hard, you get ridiculed for it.
But you don't need the bat flip to make the game fun.
Absolutely.
Just play the game hard like Pete Rose.
But wait, they took it out. You have to slide through the base and you take it out. In football, you got to watch. You got to hit in a zone that's right here. Everything, in this new era, everything is so ticky-tack. Everything has been blown out of proportion, you know? We developed this talk show for a simple reason, for a platform to give back to the fans, to give back to the combat sports world. Because I'm tired of flipping on a radio station and hearing this new school. And in reality, all it is a bunch of joking people throwing back beers, having a good time, and lollygagging and stuff like that. And to me, that's not how you talk anymore. That's not how you should carry yourself accordingly. When you're talking about combat sports or you're talking about sports in general, forget the new school. Forget the new school. You need a little bit of old school, a little bit of blood, sweat, and tears to go into it. And the way that I see is that you got Canelo and Triple G. They should have just put all their stuff aside, followed their words, led by actions, called it a day, and should never allow your corporate greed, your corporate mongers to get involved. Should never have happened. And I'm going to leave it right there. You are a man. Act like it.
Stand up, fight.
Absolutely.
You want to say you're going to do something, do it.
Be there. Be there. You're listening to the Sports Warriors. We get to tell the fans something, Sean. That's something that hasn't been done yet in Cleveland. And no, LeBron James didn't bring you a championship. Hashtag, sorry, LeBron. But you do have a new champion. More with the DeGrasse Brothers. Sean and Tristan DeCross, we'll be right back.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, and we are back. We are your boys, Sean and Tristan DuCross, the Sports Warriors. You can find us on Twitter, at the DuCross Bros. You can find us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan DuCross, or the Sports Warriors. Hit up our website at www.thehotspotshow.com. In the meantime, head on over to YouTube, and you can check out your boys. In the meantime, Sean, UFC 198 happened. And finally, Cleveland has a champion, and it's not LeBron James. Cleveland rocks! Cleveland rocks! I feel like doing that stupid little running man challenge. Yeah, that's not even the running man. We'll not even get on to that one. But Stipe Miocic is crowned the new heavyweight champion of the world and gets to take that title to Cleveland. There's your first champion in years, in decades. Cleveland gets their first champion. It's in MMA.
And how did it happen? Stipe Miocic walked in there and punched Fabricio's funny-looking face that he does square and put him out. So he no longer does that weird-looking face that he does.
No, because it's permanently now on his face.
But what was interesting, again, I had to post it on our Facebook, Sean DuCross, if you want to go look at it, with our buddies from Fightbook, was that, did you notice something about Fabricio when he came into that fight?
In Sean's infernal words. Apparently, Sean loves calling people fluffy. That he looks at the heavyweights and he'd be like, all right, this guy's going to lose because he ate a few too many donuts or Twinkies. So therefore, he gets a little fluffy and therefore he's going to lose. As long as the other guy comes in with abs, you lose. Have I been wrong yet? No, unfortunately not. Sean's like 3-0 since he started this. And it's funny because everybody looked at your post and said, did you notice something?
What?
Oh, he was fluffy. Yep. He was. But what I'm trying to... What I said on last week's show, Sean, was that in order for Fabricio to actually do some kind of damage to Miocic, was that I thought, okay, start peppering him with leg kicks.
Well, that's what
I thought that was his best strategy against Miocic. That in order to back him away from him in that distance, that's how you could have done it. But instead he came out and tried to bull rush him.
And when you do that against a pure striker in Stipe Miocic, that was the worst decision you could have possibly made. And that's what I was saying on last week's show, was that you had to establish the distance if you're Fabricio. Use the leg kicks, keep the distance at bay, work for the takedown. Stipe Miocic could not be afraid and had to get inside. Boy, did he get inside and let his hands fly. And the next thing you know it, Fabricio Werdum tasted leather and went sleepy. So you look at it and you say, well, it was all written. It was all there as soon as Fabricio walked in.
Sean, but isn't it weird that the UFC has been trying to get a USA world champion, and here they get Miocic. How is that? Like, I'm not trying to spew a conspiracy, but for years they've been trying to get a USA
world champion.
Tristan,
they already have
one.
Who? Luke Rockhold.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But for the heavyweight division,
if you want to say conspiracy theory, then maybe it's the fact that maybe they don't want non-USA people to have titles. If
right.
You want to go conspiracy theory and go way out there on a limb, well, let's not go that way around.
But from a marketing standpoint, this is good for the UFC, for the heavyweight division.
That I agree. It'll be an interesting one to see
where exactly this goes, the only logical choice right now is that Stipe Miocic is going to take on Alistair Overeem.
And that means that the only logical choice for Fabricio Werdum is Andrei Arlovski.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting one because before I get into that one, because I actually had that one written down here about why I would like to see that fight. But the interesting one is that if you want to see fireworks on paper, Stipe Miocic and Alistair Overeem makes for one exciting fight.
Because of the power.
No doubt. You're going to see two guys go down swinging like the blaze of glory. Who wouldn't want to see that? For the first time, you'll get to see two guys, two warriors, that are going to go in there that are almost the same similar style. And I like that. That's why I kind of like the Andrei Arlovski versus Fabricio Werdum kind of matchup. Because I see that Andrei Arlovski lost. And every single time he gets his foot right there in the door, somebody slams it right on his foot. And see, and that's where I come up to the whole thing about Fabricio Werdum versus Andrei Arlovski is I like that fight because I see it one of two ways. Is that this either, once again, catapults freaking Andrei Arlovski back into the title contention, even though I don't think he deserves it, even if he defeats it Fabricio Werdum, but this can easily be a title eliminator. Is that for Fabricio, title implications are on the line. Win, lose, or draw, the only thing that's on the line for Andrei Arlovski is his time in the UFC.
Very true.
Not a title fight. Just completely eliminates him from title contention. You chalk up to it, it is what it is. But the other one you can look across about is, well, you look at Fabricio Werdum, he can't fight Cain Velasquez.
Nope.
He's already scheduled to fight Travis Brown.
Yep.
What about JDS?
I was just going to say that. You can give JDS.
JDS wants another shot at a title opportunity. So why not give a guy like Fabricio Werdum, instead of giving him an instant rematch, put him in a fight against a JDS with, again, title elimination? Is that either one of these two, they don't get a title. They don't get a title shot if they lose. But if one of them wins, they're back into the title hunt. Why not? They're both showing their worth.
But
JDS just came off a very impressive win.
We have
over
to
Russell.
See the development, though, out of JDS first before we talk about it. Because he hasn't been the same guy.
He looked the same same against Rothwell. Rothwell freaking destroyed him and did a Sparta kick.
Right. But we still need to see a little bit more out of him to put him back into the title. But you still basically have a jumbled up mess right now in the heavyweight division.
Yeah.
But what's even a bigger mess right now is that middleweight division. Because Yakari Souza destroyed Vitor Belfort.
TKO in the first round, baby.
A guy that is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, right? Wouldn't you think he could get out of a mount? Like, I was watching this fight, and I'm literally dumbfounded how a guy that is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt can't get out of a mount. And looked absolutely horrendous on his back.
When you are outclassed in skill and technique with Yagare Souza, there's not a lot you can do even if you are good from your back. Period. He is relentless and a beast. I am just surprised that he won via punches. That's where I'm surprised that he did not submit him.
Dude, what was it? Because Vitor Belfort fought Chris Weidman. And remember when Chris Weidman knocked him out so bad via mount and punches? All because Vitor Belfort thought that it would be cool to lay on his back and try to punch his way off his back to coming into this and allowing Yakari Souza to sit on top of him and pound him in. Like, you didn't even think that, oh, dude, I got mounted again? I'm just going to stand here and get obliterated. Because last time I tried to punch myself out, and I got cold clocked. At this point, I'm looking at Vitor Belfort. He's still in the top. He's going to vastly drop out of the rankings after this loss. But for me, I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking that you can't give him any more top five contenders. You can't. Because it is now that time where, again, you gotta sit down and have a talk with some of these guys. Just put your hand on his shoulder. Be like, dude, I love you. I have mad respect for you.
That's what I was
going to
say.
But you are 142 years old in Brazilian years. You are done, my friend.
For a minute, I thought you were going to whisper sweet nothings.
No!
And say that's what you need to do. You need to whisper sweet nothings into his ear and make him realize.
And tell him that there's a box of chocolate and roses on the bed?
Absolutely. Lay out some little rose petals for him and say, here's your exit cue. Follow it right back to your bed in Brazil and call it a day. But that's the thing with the Brazilians, is they are relentless. They will stay at the top of the food chain for as long as their body lets them stay at the top of the food chain. They will continue to fight until they can't fight anymore. It's as if that's the only thing they know how to do. You look at Damian Maia. Damian Maia came in and did exactly what I thought he was going to do. He submitted Matt Brown.
Dude, he looked good.
But that's the thing with Damian Maia. One second, Damian Maia looks like he's the godfather of Brazil, that he can't move and can't walk. And 2 seconds later, he's beating up a guy who's as vicious as Matt Brown. And you're left wondering about, this guy's annoying. He looks awkward in the octagon. He looks like he can't go anymore. He looks like his gas tank is done, but yet somehow this guy still comes back and still defies odds.
Because with Damian Maia, something that everybody has to understand is that evolution is key to success. Regardless of his age, he goes into that gym every single day.
That he does.
Works and trains with kids all over the world. Because of them alone, still makes him hungry for that goal. And that motivation and that drive is all that he needs.
Yeah, and I can see that, because when you go ahead and oblige and take on Matt Brown, and then you submit him in the first round, that's the things you look for. Then you go across the bow and you look at Christiane Cyborg Justino in her debut and her whooping of Leslie Smith. And now many people say that the fight was stopped prematurely.
No, it was saved prematurely.
When you're getting beat up that bad and taking that many strikes, I tend to agree. The referee did his due diligence and stopped the fight in a timely manner.
I just look at Justino, and I look at the Leslie Smith fight, and I said it last week that I looked at both of them and said that this was a feed to Justino, because you're not going to put her in a tough fight. You're not going to put her into a fight that where you could ultimately think that there's a possibility that she might lose. You're not. What you did was you booked her into a fight that you knew she was going to win single-handedly. You knew that you were in Brazil, so you knew you're going to get the crowd behind her. This was all a publicity stunt in favor of Justina. Misha Tate comes out and said, hey girl, you made 139. Drop down to 134 and you got yourself a fight. None of that's ever going to happen. It'll never be for a title unless they create a fake weight division. Create a fake weight division.
Let's just make it 145 and call it a day.
Right.
Just make it 145, make it the featherweight, and just call it a day.
Dude, you have to make a fake category at 145, and then you have to go out and find 145ers to fight her. Huh. No one's going to want to fight her at 145.
And Trista, to say that this was another feeding to Cyborg, everybody's a feeding to Cyborg. No matter what their skill level is or anything like that.
Last relevant fight, four Cyborg Santos, even outside of the ones that we've seen in Invicta. Let's be real here. The last legitimate fight was in reality back in Strikeforce against Gina Carano. No. Yes.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Her real last real legit fight was against the girl that she put in retirement and sent her to go after Kevin Ross. That is the reality of the situation. She has fought girls in Invicta that have no idea what they are getting themselves into when they look across that cage and they see Cyborg.
The only fight that I saw ever in my time since covering combat sports that made any sense to me was our girl Erin Tohill. Physique-wise, build-wise, striking-wise,
height-wise,
everything meshed those two. Why, though, if that fight was never able to materialize or anything like that, still remains unknown at this time.
Dude,
about
good.
Why it broke down in Strikeforce and why it never happened. Because that's the only fight on paper that ever made any sense. Erin Tohill versus Cyborg. That is it. Everybody else is too small against Cyborg. When you are that small comparison coming against Cyborg, you're going to get beat up. You're going to get out muscled.
All this is true.
And that's what you see time and time again against Cyborg. The only other woman that comes up to stature-wise is Ronda Rousey. But Ronda Rousey needs to stop running away and just oblige this fight, win, lose, or draw.
Just get it done. Make it happen. That's all you have to do. But that's kind of along the same boats that instead of ducking and running, you had one guy that ran full steam ahead and wanted a title shot in the middleweight division. That's Michael Bisping. And due to unforeseen circumstances, we're now going to get a Luke Rockhold versus Michael Bisping 2. And last time they fought, Rockhold choked out Michael Bisping.
Okay, I was going to try to wait for this till we go after...
Well,
to
we
go
can.
To break.
That could be our setup going right into our break
right
now.
Then we'll go into break. We'll touch on this when we get right back into the grind of things and start to round out our show. Because this one annoys me just as much as the Canelo versus Gennady Golovkin fight.
Right? But we're the sports warriors. I'm Tristan Ducross. Along my side, as always, is my partner in crime, Sean Ducross. We'll be right back after this.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducross, the Sports Warriors, right here on YouTube.com, as well as Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on Twitter, at the Ducross Bros. Find us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Ducross. You can hit us up on our website at www.thehotspotshow.com. In the meantime, Sean, news came out today that Chris Weidman was pulled due to an injury.
Apparently, he has a herniated disc between his C6 and C7 vertebrae that caused tingling in his arm and
right.
His forearm.
And he could barely walk. But so he's out of 199. Yakari Souza and Michael Bisping were being tossed back and forth. And if you want to see discussions and stuff like that, all over our social media network, by all means, you know where to hit us up. But we were all trying to figure out Michael Bisping, Yakari Souza, hands down, with a shot of a doubt, it should have been Yakari Souza. But an injury to him from his fight catapults Michael Bisping into the title fight. Now, I kept saying Michael Bisping doesn't deserve it, because half his wins came in London. Half his wins were handed to him from his London era. He did not legitimately win all those fights. Go to YouTube, watch half his fights, dude. He lost almost a half a dozen of them. But due to going to judges in London, you got the favor. Here again, we are talking about Michael Bisping in a title hunt.
There's a reason why.
Before he gets a title shot.
There's a reason why 9 years, 11 months, and 11 days, why Michael Bisping hasn't been given a shot since winning the Ultimate Fighter. And that's because of the fact that he has lost a number of fights of worthy caliber. And everybody's referred to him as a gatekeeper of the middleweight division. Because of the fact that he doesn't win big title fights, or he wins in lackluster form. Let me educate you on something, okay? He's 5-2 in the last 7 fights. His wins come against Anderson Silva. And let's be real. Anderson Silva knocked him out with that knee.
Right?
He was saved by the bell and awarded the win. Dude was knocked out. He didn't win that fight. You go back and you look at his win against Styles Lightis in the Glasgow, Scotland showing on Fox Sports.
He lost that fight.
He won that fight via split decision.
But he lost.
Lightis went ahead and outstriked him in that. Even though reports show that somehow Bisping had more strikes in that fight, but you go back to that fight, clearly Lightis was showing more effort in that fight, was throwing more punches in that fight. So when you look at it, in my eyes, I had Lightis winning that one by split decision. I could have seen it go a little bit both ways, but on paper, I had Lightis winning that fight. You'll go back to his destruction of Kung Lee. Kung Lee is about 50 years old. The guy's on his last hurrah when he took that fight. He doesn't train competitively 100% of the time. He's good at what he does, yes, not to discount him. But at that time in that fight, he was outmatched, outclassed by a much stronger, younger, agile in Michael Bisping. But you look, he gets destroyed by Luke Rockhold. He gets destroyed
by
Tim Kennedy in unanimous decision. So how does he warrant justification for the title? I guess it's because right now they're trying to sort out all the mess of the middleweight division,
right,
and trying to figure out where
but
to go.
See, don't you think, or wouldn't you have thought, that the best fight for Michael Bisping would have been Brunson?
No, that was one I was disagreeing again, wholeheartedly. Derek Brunson did not deserve a title shot when Derek Brunson had
no against Michael Bisping.
Oh, yes. That would make sense. The only one that makes sense.
I said give Brunson Michael Bisping a title contender fight,
yeah,
and the winner of that gets Luke Rockhold.
Yeah.
I thought that made perfect sense.
Yeah, but
that's,
I guess
just,
they didn't want to go ahead and hold off the Luke Rockhold title defense at UFC 199. I guess that's what it comes down to, is that they didn't want to go, oh, okay, well, we need to pull another heavyweight, we needed to pull another title opportunity off the books. That's the only thing I can think of why they didn't want
to
hold
it
back.
Save the whole entire card.
Exactly. They had to salvage it some way. This was salvaging it for the combat fanatics that have followed the Ultimate Fighter. They do support Michael Bisping. He does have a cult following.
Yes, he does.
Which is weird. The count has his opportunity. But I think at the end of the day, when Michael Bisping gets his opportunity against Luke Rockhold, if he does lose and he goes down, that the talk of him ever getting another title shot should be null and void, because he would have lost now twice to Luke Rockhold. And his resume is still not as good And Yakari Souza has made it perfectly clear. Win, lose, or draw. He's going to beat somebody. He wants the champion after this, and he will destroy both parties. Doesn't matter which one it is.
See, this is where you look at Michael Bisping and you're just hoping and you're just wishing that his fans, this is me acting as one of his fans, that they are praying to the heavens above. And they're just in awe right now that he gets a title shot for the first time in years. And he's literally going to step into a ring against a freak, against an animal like Luke Rockhold that has gotten a heck of a lot better than last time when he choked out Michael Bisping. That they hope that he goes into that cage as a different person, as a different fighter, and shows up and is able to fulfill what the Count fans say is his destiny. Let's hope that is the case. But in reality, I don't see it happening. I see this ending of one of two ways. Michael Bisping walks in and gets carried out because of a punch that sends him into London or England, and for him to never, ever come back again. See, I was going to say, Kristen, is that win, lose, or draw, one thing we are for sure to get is Michael Bisping down on his knees crying because he either A, won the title, or B, because he lost his only opportunity at capturing the middleweight.
Never get.
That's the thing we are guaranteed. Win, lose, or draw.
Sean, I hope that this is a good fight between Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping. My only fear is that the added pressure that is now on him doesn't weigh him down.
Two things that I wanted that I think we hope we don't see is that Fight Book says that half the time you don't see where Bisping's looking. So my comment to that one is that I hope this time he's looking straight ahead at Rockhold and knowing where he's going to hit. And then B, I hope that he doesn't do what I just said and that we don't see Mr. Huggy Bear. I don't want to see him hugging Rockhold up against the cage and think he's doing work. Let's be real. This is for a title fight. You said you want to do this, and this is the time when you get to see who the real men are. Then go ahead and showcase that. Put on a fight. Put on a show.
He is stepping up into a whole nother atmosphere when he steps inside that cage against Luke Rockhold, the champ. Anybody that understands about what it means to be a champ or what it means to be in championship rounds, do you not understand the pressure and the intensity and how it shifts for title fights?
Rockhold wins this fight with a head kick.
If Count loses,
retire?
Right, retirement's on the plate. And he might just have to eat it.
Eat the kick?
Eat the retirement.
I want to see him eat the kick, though. But, so, that's where we stand with this fight. It's just one of those things that left you scratching your head about why people were so on Michael Bisping. But you know what? Good for him.
Right?
We did enough little beat up on Michael Bisping. But the good thing is that he finally gets his opportunity at almost a decade. So, bravo for him. But now we've got Bellator 155 coming up. That freaking just 154 just happened. And now we're right back here. 155
now is right around the corner. Are we watching UFC or Bellator?
But this is one Bellator fight card I am not that interested in when it's a headline by Melvin Manoff and Rafael Calvero. It's just not one of those things that I'm interested in, but
One fight I am interested in seeing is Pat Kern versus Georgie Karkarian.
Absolutely. But we're going to take our last and final break of the evening. Yes. Take our last and final break of the evening. We will talk about Bellator 155, maybe a little bit of 154 sprinkled in there. But we are your boys, Sean and Tristan Cross, the Sports Warriors. Be right back.
Excelsior and Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to FanboyNation.com, you need to do it today.
All right, everybody, we are back. We are the Sports Warriors. I'm Tristan Cross. Along my side, as always, is my brother, Sean Newcross. Sean, Bellator 154 happened with nothing but controversy. At least, that's the way we see it. And then we have Bellator 155 right around the corner. They have literally gone back to back and even filling all the way out to what? Bellator 159?
158. So we've only got about 10 minutes left, so not a lot going on, really. I mean, so like we were saying before we went to break, the only fight that interests me is the Pat Kern fight versus Georgie Karkarian. Because Pat Kern is trying to establish himself once again as a top-flight featherweight, trying to put together another string of wins, getting his second consecutive win, considering that this guy is 2-5 in the last 7 fights. He won over a late replacement in Emmanuel Sanchez. He's taken on a beast in Georgie Karkarian, who's a good striker, won 14 fights via submission. This could go one of multiple ways. Either Pat Kern bit off a little bit more than he could chew, or he's putting himself in a good spot to try to get another title fight at the featherweight title opportunity.
Look, the way I see this fight, Pat Kern, 2-3 in his last 5 fights, taking on Georgie. I like the matchup. My only fear is that I hope, and I really do pray, that Pat Kern does not leave his head exposed when he goes for a takedown.
Right, and don't shoot in T-minus 2 seconds. Fill it out.
Right.
Pump your brakes.
Engage that distance like Daniel Weichel did against Georgie. That stopped the momentum for Georgie Karkarian when he was supposed to get that title shot against Bubba Jenkins.
Yeah.
You got to fill out that pressure. You got to fill him out first before you just jump in there and go to the woodshed. But, Sean, I disagree with you on the Melvin and Carvalho fight because Melvin Manoff has legitimately lost his last 3 fights because he lost at Bellator 152 in the kickboxing. He went to sleep against Alexander Shalomenko. Wow, that's a mouthful. But that was overturned to a no contest. Got knocked out cold by Schilling, and somehow he gets a title shot. It's a weak division, I guess.
That's the only thing I can think of is that it's a weak division for when you look at those two are fighting for the title.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this matchup. I'm thinking that, dude, I really feel bad for Manoff because he's going in against a guy that loves to stand and bang. I mean, this guy has run off 10 knockout finishes. 9 by punches.
So are we going to see now what happens if Melvin Manoff gets knocked out hard again like what he did got done the last 2 fights?
You have to sit him down and talk.
Because there's only so many times you can get knocked out as bad as he has.
And for once, I have to say that I am really happy for Joey Beltran.
But Joey Beltran has gone from a heavyweight to a lightweight, light heavyweight, down to like a middleweight. This guy guy fluctuates more than anybody else I've ever seen.
But
one minute he looks like a sick person, and the next minute he's now back up to being a light heavyweight division. It's like, dude, you're destroying your body from the inside out.
That's what I keep saying. That's why I love the fact that he's at light heavyweight. Because you can't keep killing your body and bleeding yourself dry every single fight. Drop it all the way down to 170. Well, you know dang well you ain't no 170. 205 looks better on his body. He's going against Chase Grumley, who got knocked out by Chase Daniel, who will also be on the card. But Grumley's a guy that has a lot of sickening. Oh, Dan Charles, and it was a sickening knockout for Chase Grumley. So this benefits both guys because you get a guy that's going up in weight to 205 versus a guy that's trying to get redemption that lost to a guy that he should not have lost to. So I like this because you got a battle of endurance from Chase Grumley, but yet you have the power of Beltran. Beltran's going to come in there and has one mission, and that is to knock off Grumley's head. But if Grumley plays his cards right, I say you take him the distance. You take him into deep waters, and you can beat Joey. But if you go in there and you're just going to say my power versus your power, I'm going Joey all day.
And Joey has that power still. Even though he's fluctuated from his weight, he still has that KO power. Well, the thing that I'm most confused by is why is it that you have Marlos Cohen and Alexis Defuse, or sorry if I got her name wrong, but fighting for the new featherweight title in Bellator.
And it's on the prelims.
Prelims.
On SpikeTV.com.
Why? Why? You're trying to make this relevant, and you put it on the prelims.
Is it just me, or are they kind of burying the titles right now?
Without really doing that. And
because, look, Will Brooks gets released, so that title in my eyes is buried. The heavyweight title gets ripped off their heavyweight champion, buried. The women's first ever featherweight championship, and it's relegated to internet TV, buried. Your middleweight champion, buried, because you can't figure out how to consistently get them in front of the TV. Your light heavyweight title is Liam McGeary, and that's buried because you've been so consumed with to try to figure out who you can build up to face Liam McGeary.
Well, here's my question on that one, okay? You said the titles are buried. We talked about this last week, about the titles being buried. Will Brooks got released, and his title was already being buried when he was being passed over for main event fights and not being showcased. Why is it that the 158 in London, Liam McGeary, the world champion in light heavyweight, is not headlining in his own town, but yet you've got Kimbo Slice versus James Thompson, Paul Daly versus Josh Koscheck as the headliners, but Liam McGeary is your champion?
See, if I was Bellator, this is where I would have been in awe that I would be literally foaming at the mouth with the possibility that I could have Litvassov, I could have Paul Daly, I could have Michael Venom Page, I could have Liam McGeary. Do you not understand? You could literally tear the roof off the place in London with those four guys alone.
See, if Phil Davis can come back and compete at a high level and take on Liam McGeary for the title, there should have been no questions asked about that.
Absolutely.
So that's the way I would have seen it. I mean, Phil Davis just won a controversial win over King Mo that left many people scratching their head that he didn't beat King Mo. King Mo was winning that fight 2-1. How that became a unanimous decision is beyond me.
Yep.
That fight shouldn't even been close. Phil Davis ran out of that one and just robbed. We had a screw job, if you will, for King Mo. We should see a rematch between those two to sort this mess out.
Last time I saw a screw job this bad, it was against Rampage Jackson. And this was like the Bret Hart incident with Shawn Michaels where somebody was outside ringing a bell. Somebody had a gun pointed to the judge's head, and somehow they gave it a 30-27 to Phil Davis. I don't know what fight they were watching, but seriously, here's my glasses. You might need it. But we are the DeCross brothers. We are done. We are out of here. I'm Tristan DeCross. This is my brother, Sean DeCross. Until next time, we do this every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Catch us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan DeCross, or on Twitter, at the DeCross Bros. Until next time, we're out.
Get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan DeCross.